Yogananda once said, Swamiji quotes him in The Path, he said, you know, looking out over at a group of devotees, he said, oh, if you could only see yourselves as I see you, you would see that you're nothing but light, just beautiful light. Ramakrishna, who was always just going off into ecstasy, there's a little exchange recorded in the gospel where there was some festival in another village, and they wanted, oh, Ramakrishna weekend, someone said, you know, we'll get a carriage and we'll go. And he said, oh, he said, I'll go there. And as soon as I see all those souls, it'll just put me in ecstasy and I won't see anything anyway. It's such a sort of human way to say it. The sight of all those devotees will just be so uplifting to me that I'll just lose consciousness. So what's the point? We'll just stay here. You're kind of like, that's a problem. And that's why Master said to memorize samadhi. When I was in the monastery, we used to say it all together after every, at the end of morning meditation, we'd all recite samadhi together. It was actually a very good way. I must confess, I don't quite know all the words anymore, but for many years I could say it all the way through, and I can almost now. But just because we want to constantly impress on our consciousness that this is really who we are, and just really get into all of those past, present, no more for me, you know, just like, just time, just going away. And Master also touches it with such sweetness, a tiny bubble of laughter. I have become the sea of mirth itself. And it just takes all the pretense out of it and all of the sort of grand majesty, which is also marvelously in that poem. But when it finally ends, it just ends on such a light note. Many of you know that our plans to finish this temple include, in each, there's 10 of these little categories, little sections between the rafters, and in each one of them there's going to be two lines from the poem Samadhi up on the wall, and we're just working with the mechanics of a fairly elaborate system of etched glass and illuminated etched glass, which is going to be quite stunningly beautiful. But so what will happen is that all of you and me too will, for the rest of our lives, we'll sit here and we'll have these concepts just up on the wall. You know, and it's very, it's, we want to create as many ways as possible to remind ourselves and to anyone who walks in here that something is happening in this space that's not happening in other places. And we had thought of putting words on the wall, and then Swamiji suggested we use the poem Samadhi. And just to finish the thought, we'll put a little folder in the, on the back wall with the whole poem and a little plaque that just says, you know, Yogananda recommended that we memorize this and say it every day, and then people can take the little thing. And but we'll just sit here and we'll see by thirsty, by deeper, longer, thirsty, guru-given meditation comes this celestial samadhi. And so for the rest of our spiritual lives in this area, you know, we'll be able to look up on the wall and just see that. You can contemplate each one of those words, deeper, longer, thirsty, but then it says guru-given meditation. So at the end, after all of that thought of self-effort, then all of a sudden we realize, but it's just the grace of the guru that the whole thing comes. And the subtlety of words like that. I was reading Whispers from Eternity, the original editions, not the 1989, or actually the 8th edition that SRF puts out. In 1981, they published what they call the first edition. And they also publish a horrible edited edition, which we don't sell, so don't worry about it. But in the original editions, Yogananda wrote this whole instructions to the reader about how to use the poems in Whispers from Eternity. It's just so beautiful. And he's so colorful in his images. And he said, words are like a drunken, mute person who cannot express to you what's made them intoxicated, but can only sort of gesture a little bit. Isn't that a colorful image? He says, that's what words are like. He said, so the words of these prayer demands, which is what he calls the poems and whispers from eternity, which he said were given to him by God, he said, are intoxicated with divine bliss, but they can only hint at it. And so you have to really meditate on them deeply. And if you meditate on those words deeply enough, they will reveal to you the intoxicating wine that's behind them. Isn't that just an exquisite image? And so, of course, that's why he wants us to memorize this poem, Samadhi, so that we repeat these words over and over again until the true divinity behind them comes out. He says he wrote this from a state of cosmic consciousness. Swami in the Path says that Yogananda said he actually sat on the New York subway and wrote this poem. And as Master said, he rode the subway from end to end. And then he said, they never asked me for my ticket. And then he adds, in fact, they never saw me. So you don't know what level of riding on the subway he was. But that's how he describes it. And then he went into the state of consciousness and described it. Just really tried to tell us what it felt like. Amazing, isn't it? But he did it for very, very profound and important reasons. And it's an important thing for us to respond to. Then you have this whole beautiful episode of him returning from his little away. You know, Yogananda has taken this little jaunt into the Himalayas, and then he just walks back. And you know, there's no long period in between of Yogananda having to swallow his youthful pride and come back to his guru. And you just have this complete equanimity on the part of Sri Yukteswar. Just an incredible example. Master, you must be angry with me. Sri Yukteswar says, why would I be angry? You know, anger comes from thwarted desire. I'm not using you for anything of my own. Just what an extraordinary example of true friendship is what we see. I just want your best welfare. Now that you're back, you can't disappoint me. You can only really let yourself down. But if I had a reaction to your behavior, then I would be thinking of myself, not of you. Ooh, next time you're about to respond to something, just let that one run for a while. It's really, we hardly know these masters really, well, they just come to show us, because we all want love, and we want to be loved, and we want to give love, and we talk about it all the time, and then we just are so pathetic compared to what really real love is. And then we don't understand why it doesn't work out for us, right? You know, we keep putting our hand on the hot stove and getting so mad because it burned again. And Swamiji says, I'm going to give you one more chance not to burn me. Damn, you did it again, you know? That's sort of what it is. We just constantly pretend that we're loving when we're really just trying to serve ourselves. And then we're surprised that it doesn't work out. So we have this just beautiful example. And then you have, this is such a touching, it's just so, I want to say human, but it's just so vibrantly real. Sri Yukteswar, Yogananda goes and meditates, and he's determined to meditate. He's probably not 20 years old by the time all this is happening. He's a young man. He goes to meditate. Yogananda calls him. He doesn't want to answer. You know that I'm meditating. I'm meditating, sir. Sri Yukteswar says, I know how you're meditating. Poor boy, he says, poor boy. And Sri Yukteswar is, you know, a grown, mature, gray-haired man, and he has this lad. Come to me, he says, and then just touches him on the chest. It's such a joke in our community. Everybody's always like, just like looking for someone. People will say, they'll kind of like stand in front of Swami. Just in the hope something will happen. Yukteswar touches him on the chest because it's in the heart, the center of the Imperium. You know, it's this intuitive perception. Here, I don't understand, but that's how he describes it. Then all of a sudden, everything opens up. The breath goes out of his body. Yogananda describes the twin forces of breath and thought that just keep this thing going all the time, keep it vibrating. And only when breath and thought become absolutely still does all the vibration stop. Amazing thought, isn't it? So Yogananda teaches us the simplest meditation in the world. Watch the breath. Dissolve into the breath. Watch the breath until the breath ceases. Enjoy the pauses between the breath. And it's like everything. I mean, there's, again, I'll come back to this theme of institutional religion and dogma and theology. I mean, there's this huge, people have these huge edifices that they call religion. You know, huge buildings and institutions and rules and systems and hundreds of years of building it up and you know, clergy associations and laws, and you know, there's so and so, there's all these lawsuits within the churches because of this and because of that. It's all about stilling the breath, stilling the thought, and perceiving the divine. That is it. Zip. Everything else is just to support that. And if it doesn't support that, it has nothing to do with it. It's just worldly. I mean, yeah, there's some other things that are true, but it all comes back to that. We just keep it as simple as we can possibly keep it. In our own hearts and minds, too. In the Rubaiyat, Yogananda says, there's only one place God can be experienced, and he says, in the human nervous system. It's such a completely un-euphonic sort of way to say it. In the human nervous system. And we make this, you know, this the body is the temple. And then sometimes people start worshiping the physical body as if that's what it actually means. You know, my body is my temple. And we make it beautiful and we worship its youth and we sort of are always thinking about it. It's not what it meant. Because you have a body, you could, in this consciousness, you can absorb the whole of infinity into this physical body if it's purified sufficiently. It's not about it as an entity. It's a vehicle for something else. It's just an amazing prospect, isn't it? That's why human beings are the most advanced, because only the human body has the capacity to have cosmic consciousness. So all the debates about whether the dolphins or the whales or any of the others really have it, they don't, according to the masters, because they don't have a nervous system that can perceive infinity. They can perceive some things, but they can't perceive infinity. Only the human being can do that. And that's why we have to take care of this body, because it's capable of doing that. Once Happy Winningham, who had AIDS for so many years, was asking Swamiji, how long do I keep struggling to keep this body? Because she didn't care about losing it from that point of view. He said, well, as long as you could still meditate and do Kriya. He said, as long as there's a possibility of having divine experience through it, you should keep it. And then at the point when it becomes such a drawback that you can't really use it to have divine experience, then that's the time to let it go. You know, disease overtook her, so she never really had the moment to sit up and decide. But such a simple way of saying it, isn't it? Keep going as long as you can have divine experience through it. And then Master just is so completely, just so real world. A cow could be seen coming down Reigate Lane, and when it got to the gate, I saw it with my physical eyes, and then when it got on the other side, I saw it again with my divine sight. Some of you have been to Reigate Lane, this little narrow, dusty street where Sri Yukteswar's ashram is now, and it's just a narrow, dusty street. It's not a street. It's just a lane, a dirt lane, and you see the gate. I think the gate's been rebuilt, but you can just kind of see the cow coming up the road, and cows do occasionally come up the road. And he just shows how he just continues to relate to the whole of creation, but just seeing it so completely differently. I mean, this is the secret of the master's equanimity. They don't have to discipline themselves to be detached. It's like, how can you be attached to things that just keep dissolving and redissolving into light? So it's a good technique also to use when you're beginning to be really upset with someone. Just kind of look at them and watch them dissolve into light. You know, then what is there to be upset about? Quite seriously. Or when you feel like you're lacking something, you want to grab it. Just imagine it all dissolving into light. It's a very practical teaching. It's not at all a faraway teaching. And the more we solve our problems by going to the top of the mountain, the closer we'll come to the top of the mountain. Don't mess around with all the little solutions in between. This is where, you know, psychology and spirituality just divide. It's not really about just getting your whole little scene in order. It's just looking at it and seeing light. You know, it doesn't matter what your odd little details about it. This is the way you solve your problems. It's just by lifting your consciousness up to the light and seeing it from that point of view. Don't think you can't practice it. You really can. When you're, you know, in traffic and you feel annoyed, just dissolve all the cars around you into little bubbles of light. Imagine that you're Yogananda having an experience of cosmic consciousness and it's all just dissolving. Well, at least make it more entertaining. You know, what is there to get upset about? It's really just a beautiful story. Well, any other comments or thoughts? Yes?
Why does Yogananda ask the question?
Isn't that weird? The same thing, Gyanamata says the same thing to Yogananda. You know, please, when will I realize God? And Yogananda says, you already have. I cannot understand it. I can play with words. I have no idea what it's about. It must have something to do with just ceasing to exist. And I don't know. That's the only thing I can figure. I've tried to understand that one. I've even heard Swami talk about it. And I really can't say anything. Swami just sort of mumbles things like, well, you know, maybe when there is no sense of self anymore, there's no self to evaluate. You know, there's no ego anymore. So the ego, how would the ego know? But the fact that Gyanamata said exactly the same thing to Master, and Master replied in the same way, oh, isn't that funny, you already have realized God. You would think that you would know, but I guess you don't.
Seems normal.
I guess so.
That's normal.
I guess so. It's a very odd thing. I find it very odd too. When I saw it coming up in this chapter, I said, oh dear, there it is again. Anybody have any better ideas? Tom?
One aspect of it, like, especially here in the West, we tend to think of God as God, the long white beard, standing there in the throne. So I know that a little part of my mind is as well, body means all see.
That. Well, that's what Sri Yukteswar answers. Ha, 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 did you really expect it? But then Yogananda then describes it in terms of his consciousness. And the consciousness of freedom and the consciousness of joy and the consciousness of wisdom. You know, the manifestations of spirit. And Yogananda had to admit that, well, in fact, that was the experience he was having, and I guess that's it. But by no means would it be a letdown, so it's a very peculiar, just a very peculiar exchange. Next time I see Swami, I'll ask him again and see if he says anything I can remember. Yeah?
Sorry. Well, it was interesting that he quotes Sri Yukteswar saying, "Avenue of bliss is God."
Yeah.
God is avenue of bliss.
Yeah.
Just a poetical way of saying the same thing, although there's some distinction perhaps, but God is more than avenue of bliss.
Well, I think if God is more than avenue of bliss, because there's the eight manifestations of spirit. But ever new bliss is definitely one of them. So if you're experiencing ever new bliss, I mean, think about the phrase, ever new bliss. You know, every moment it's fresh. Ever new bliss. That's pretty impressive. And if you're in that state, then you're in a state of divine consciousness. Fun, huh? Okay, any other insoluble questions? All right. Thank you very much. We skip next week. And then on the 28th, we do 22 and 26. Ooh, the science of Kriya Yoga and the heart of a stone image, visiting Divine Mother Dakineshwar. I don't know.